You are listening to the Doug Hagmann Radio Show, weekdays 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And now the man behind the mic, a private investigator with over 30 years under his belt, Doug Hagmann.
Good morning, everyone. It's 6 a.m. on the West Coast of America, 9 a.m. here in the East. Welcome to Hagmann. It is the Doug Hagmann Investigative Hour for today. It's Friday, February 2nd, 2018, Groundhog Day, in case you're wondering. And yes, six more weeks of winter. Yeah, who could? As if, right? Is it what? Instead of 5 weeks and 6 days? We saw that coming. I want to thank everyone for joining me this morning. We'll take an in-depth dive into what's going on today. And of course, everyone is sitting on the edge of their chairs, pins and needles, waiting for this four-page FISA memo executive summary to come out, to be released. And, okay, look, I have, let's talk. You and I, let's talk. All right. Here's the situation. Now, normally, and I'm gonna get very personal here because I'm just gonna dive right into it. I'm gonna share some personal information that I don't normally share because I just don't do it. Last night I was just so tired after I got back from the studio. I got home and just tired. So normally, when I do my show, when I do this show, the Doug Hagmann Radio Show, which is every day, Monday through Friday, 9 o'clock in the morning Eastern Time, I get up at 4:30. So I try to get up at 4, but I found that, okay, 4:30, that's my time to get up because there's a lot of prep that goes into these shows. And you may say, yeah, well, okay, hold your... Tammy, knock that off. Okay. Now, there is a lot of preparation that goes into these shows. A good 3 hours, you know, is just going through all the media and such. But anyway, so because I get up at 4:30, I generally, to avoid disturbing my wife, who doesn't sleep well at night anyway, I usually sleep in the guest room. People might say, wow, man, you know, if somebody was like in our house, they'd say, what are you guys having, marital? No, I sleep in the guest room to avoid, because nobody wants an alarm going off at, 4:30 in the morning. Well, I was just so tired. Lady, the studio dog, she was dragging her tail too. So we jump up and we go into what lady knows, the lady, the studio dog, and I, we call the big bed, you know, In the master bedroom where my wife and I mean it's our bedroom, so we jump up in the bed and lady was out like in a heartbeat, okay, and she's on her back snoring, and on a Casper mattress, by the way, Casper mattress, one of our sponsors, great mattress, Casper.com/Hagmann. Anyway, had to throw that plug in there. Anyway, so I decide, okay, I couldn't even make it up to the guest room. So I fell asleep in the big bed, right? So the alarm goes off at, it was 4:30 this morning. And, of course, lady, the studio dog, she's, snoring in my ear. And she doesn't take too kindly to that. But I see this glow. See this glow over on the other side of the bed. And it's coming from an iPad, and it's my wife on an iPad, 4:30 in the morning. I'm thinking, hey, is she having an affair? What's going on? No, I'm kidding about that. So as my feet hit the floor, I said, what are you doing? She said, looking for the memo. It hasn't come out yet. And I thought, wow, you know, everyone is looking for the memo, right? It's going to come out. And sometime today, perhaps. But this is the big news. And I know people might be getting sick and tired of hearing me talk about the memo. If you are, I apologize. But look at it this way. And I did have a bit of conversation at 4:30 this morning with my wife. And I said, well, okay, you know, is it out? Well, first of all, is it out? As if someone was going to pop it out there at 3 in the morning or whatever. She said, no, it's not. No, it's not. So, where was I going with this? Except to say that everyone is looking at this, and people, I've gotten emails saying, you know, there's more news out there than this memo. And that is exactly true. There is. Well, let me throw this in there too. Because it is not out here by airtime, I will do a special broadcast. So I ask everyone listening to this broadcast, if you like this show, go to HagmanReport.com and click on the page that hosts, that has where my show is resident there, where my show resides there, at HagmanReport.com. Two N's, HagmanReport.com. And there you'll find all of, on my show page, on the Doug Hagman Radio Show page, you'll find the kind of like an automatic, not an automatic player, but a player that lists the last, I don't know, four or five shows, whatever they are. Eric set it up. He did a great job, Eric the Tech. And the shows will, this show and other shows will appear there. But if you want to be, where I was going with that is, if you want to be notified of when like special shows are up, go to Blog Talk Radio. Now, even though I broadcast on Global Star Satellite Radio and other venues, Blog Talk Radio, I consider that my home. I mean, they're great people there, but they have a feature there where you on my show page, you can click a follow button, and by doing so, you'll be notified. You're not spammed or anything like that. You just click follow and you'll be notified when a new show is up. So that's important right now, because as of right now, the memo, of course, is not out. It will be, I do suspect, by the end of the business day today. I suspect, knowing what I know, I suspect some coordination with the, we'll just say 9 o'clock broadcast tonight. I just kind of suspect some coordination there. Because this information must get out. There's no question about it. And about that, why I'm really focused on this four-page executive summary FISA memo is this. I'll use this analogy. Let's say there is an arson fire in your town going on right now, and it's at 100 Main Street. I don't know, 100 Main Street. And the fire department's there, you know, and they're battling the blaze and whatever. And then there is this car accident at, 200 State Street. And then there's the traffic jam leading into or on State Street because of the fire. Now, you've got really three separate events, right? You've got the fire itself, then the car accident nearby, and then the traffic jam. Well, think of the car accident as the arsonist fleeing the fire he started, and the traffic jam is a consequence of the fire that's blazing at 100 State Street. The mental picture I'm trying to create is really the main story, the core of everything going on in this multiple crime scene, multiple incident area, is really at its core is the blaze, the inferno at 100 State Street in this example. And of course, secondary to that would be the car accident of this arsonist escaping and, let's say, hitting a parked car or flyer or a light pole or something. And then, of course, the traffic jam. All worthy, I suppose, of discussion, but at the center of it is the blaze, is the fire. And so this memo would be analogous to the fire. And then, of course, the other incidents would be secondary to the actual incident itself. So the striking at the core story here would be the actual FISA memo. The secondary and tertiary crime scenes, we'll say, or incidents would be related to the primary incident, which is the memo. I don't know if that made sense, but you get where I'm going here with this. So all of this, because what this memo will do, regardless of how the the Mockingbird Media will spin this. What this release of this memo will do, it is going to have a catastrophic effect on the Mueller investigation and everything related to those people already indicted. Okay, now, Dan Bongino, as I reference often, he went into an issue yesterday about the use of FBI assets. And let me explain something, because, again, getting personal again, this is something that, I don't know, many people know, but they really don't know. But during the 1990s, I was used as an operational asset for the FBI and the Department of Justice. I spent a couple of years in that capacity. Some people say, well, were you like a confidential informant? No. Well, no. Assets are different. Operational, there's operational assets, informational assets, but there are people that work as operational assets in certain cases for the FBI. And in so doing, in that capacity, believe me, you have got, the FBI will vet the daylights out of you. In other words, they will check your background. You just don't walk in, or you just don't become an asset for an operational asset for the FBI or the Department of Justice without the FBI checking. I mean, they want to know your motives. If you're not employed by the FBI, you're giving them information. You're working in essence to help them advance a criminal case. So, you know, they want to check to make sure that you're not doing this. We'll say in the case of an intellectual property theft, are you working for another company, we'll say, and are you doing this for motive, for cause, for bias, or do you have a bias? Or are your intentions as they should be, law and order type of intent, you know, without the color of bias in this? And the background in investigation is extremely thorough. And I remember this back, again, in the mid-1990s, dealing with the resident office here in my city. So they check for this. They want to know everything about you. And then they give you a stack of papers you fill out. And let me tell you something. I mean, you better not lie. You better not misrepresent yourself, because you could find yourself behind bars, or I mean, you could lose your rights. In the case of the memo, as it applies here, and this is why I mention that, knowing what I know and having gone through what I went through when I served in that capacity, the individuals, for example, Christopher Steele, who's often referenced as being used, his information was used as the basis for FISA warrants. Was there any vetting done? No, there was not. This will be part of the memo that's coming out, where it was clear, for example, he was working for or on behalf of an opposing political campaign, one that opposed the deep state selection of Hillary Clinton. The vetting process was skipped over, or it was known and disregarded. Now, what happens with this? Because now Bongino talked about being a federal agent. When you fill out a warrant, we'll say either a search, especially, we'll just say a search warrant, for example. And I've been with agents who filled out search warrants and provided them with information that was contained or that they put into search warrants. And people think that, well, it's because of television, sometimes it's trivialized. Well, no, you don't trivialize anything like this, because when a law enforcement officer has a search warrant, it's got to be very precise, and it has to be backed on fact. And by the way, I was a part of one that was, I mean, really screwed up. Okay, we screwed up. Well, I shouldn't say really screwed up. It was a search warrant, and I've said this before. where there was a specific item, and I'm not going to get into the actual case itself, but there was a specific chip, if you will, a computer chip that was that was the basis for the search warrant that I had observed in this office, in this factory type setting, or this industrial type setting. Was not a factory. It was a at any rate, the search warrant that I assisted in creating for the agent, the area that the search warrant covered was, for example, the office, and the various other structures within that area, within the facility. It didn't cover the individual, the focus of this investigation, that individual's vehicle. And I should have known, the FBI agent should have known, because at one point during this long investigation, I mean, it was like 6 months, there was a crate, a picture, a plastic crate, you might get at Walmart, you know, that you might store, I don't know, stuff in, just whatever. It's a plastic crate with a lid. And each of these computer chips were worth thousands of dollars. And picture that crate full, you know, something that would be bigger than a milk crate. But anyway, it just filled with these chips. So we're talking, you know, $500,000 easy worth of items. And that was the whole focus of the search warrant. Okay, well, we failed to include the vehicle owned by this individual. As it happened on this particular day, and where was that box? Was it in the office? Was it in the factory setting? No, it was in the vehicle. And you know, my heart sank right into my stomach, because I watched a man, the target of a six-month investigation, leave with the box of computer chips in his vehicle. And there was not a thing we could do about it. He waved, he smiled, he flipped us off. And there in the back, as we could see through the back window, was the exact item that we were looking for. That was the subject of the search warrant. Now, I've got to tell you this, the story did end well, because on the premises that we were, that there was the search warrant was actually being conducted or being done, there were other there's like a shoebox compared in size to what we were looking for of these chips, computer boards, if you will. So that's why you've got to be very precise. And you also have to be very precise in terms of who is giving you this information and why, the basis. So now, what Mr. Bongino had said this as well, because now as an FBI agent or a federal agent that is swearing out a search warrant, let's say you lie or you stretch the truth on a search warrant. What happens? And this is something that people are now going to wake up, and this is why people are saying this could very well close down, shut down, or adversely affect the Mueller investigation. And here's the reason. If you are an FBI agent, let's say struck, and signs off on a FISA warrant against an individual, you swear that the information contained on that warrant is true and accurate to the best of your knowledge. End of story. You put your reputation on the line. And that's a very sacrosanct situation. When you go before the judge who signs off on this warrant, in this case it would be the FISA court judge, you better damn well be accurate. And you damn well better be absolutely truthful. And most assuredly, if there is an operational asset working for the FBI, that asset better damn well be vetted. Because if any one of those aren't, then the system is not working right, or the system is not doing what it's supposed to do. Okay. In this case, remember this week we saw the Flynn sentencing being postponed. Why is that? Because it is likely that the four-page executive summary FISA memo will lead to underlying documentation that the entirety of the basis for the warrant, the basis for the prosecution of Flynn was done not just improperly, but with malice. They lied. Now, what happens here? The defense could immediately move for a motion to dismiss or to throw the case out, or to have the case reheard, or it depends on the status. Okay, I'm using I don't want to just stick to the Flynn case. This affects all cases, all the cases. So any, for example, if let's say Strzok was the signatory on the warrant for the FISA warrant, any case that Strzok worked, and that could be John Smith from Podunk, Idaho, it doesn't matter. They automatically come back into question. What a mess. Think about this. What a mess. Any investigation that was conducted by the agent or the individual or individuals who signed off on a false warrant document, they were the basis for wiretapping, I'll use that word, and it's found out not to be true, and it's revealed in this four-page executive summary that it was done with malice and with the idea to usurp a specific, it was done with political bias. That takes every case that this man has worked, every paper that he signed off on, every warrant, and every defense attorney out there is going to throw up the red flag and say, whoa, wait a minute. If he lied here, did he lie on my case with my client? And that's why this is so important. I hopefully I made sense in that. Because what I know from the inside, combined with what the information I'm getting from my FBI source, combined with open source information as well, is laying out this picture. I hope I made some sense with you on this. That's why this is such a big deal. But it's even bigger than that. By the way, I'll be appearing as a guest on InfoWars today at 2:00 Eastern Time. I believe that's 2:00 Eastern Time with Alex Jones, I believe, and I believe it's with Alex. I'm not sure, so tune in to InfoWars Day at 2:00. We're going to be talking about this and perhaps more. And that's contingent. I'm flexible. That's contingent on whether what time this four-page FISA summary memo comes out. I could get bumped. I could be moved up early. Who knows? Okay, because we all have to be flexible in these times. So I'm whatever, but I'm scheduled right now for 2:00. And the information that I've got, I'll share with the InfoWar audience. But also, the important thing as well is please hit the follow button on Blog Talk Radio, because I will be doing additional, and watch HagmanReport.com, because I'm going to be doing some additional audio shows about this, supplemental reports, especially when the memo comes out. It's that important. Again, my focus on this is not because, it's because this affects everything. Like I said, the crime scene, you've got your primary, your secondary, your tertiary crime scenes, and you've got multiple crime scenes in a complex case. And this is just that. This FISA memo four-page summary, pretty much ties together all of these. But at the epicenter, of course, is the weaponization of the Department of Justice and the FBI. And so when we look at all of this combined, we are seeing something more severe. I think that perhaps the most incredible, and I've said this before, but I'll say it again, we are witnessing the biggest coup, the biggest event in modern American history, certainly in my lifetime. People talk about Watergate. Watergate doesn't even come close to what we're seeing here. You are taking, we have seen, and all roads lead to Barack Obama. We have seen we had seen how Obama, under his oversight, weaponized the Internal Revenue Service against conservatives. That's easy enough. It's everyone understands that. Lois Lerner taking the fifth, refusing to testify. Of course, Lois Lerner holding up the processing of 501c3 applications back in several years ago, of course, so that the pushback against the deep state, against Obama and the deep state, could not go forth. And to some extent, that still goes on today, because there are still deep state bureaucrats inside the infrastructure, the swamp of D.C. Now, people are getting very anxious, saying, why in the world hasn't Donald Trump just fired everybody and started over again? Well, go back as well to that secret society reference that everyone is saying, if you talk about that, you're an idiot, and you know, that comment was walked back by the who said that, Meadows or Johnson, Senator Johnson, I believe it was, or representative, whatever. But it was a reference to the secret society. And how true is that? And of course, that was a reference to one of the text messages between Strzok and Page. Some say it was a tongue-in-cheek message, but others are saying, well, no, I mean, it didn't appear that way. So what is this secret society you're talking about? I just merely think that this is the deep state, the permanent employees within the bureaucracy of the federal government, who are doing everything they could possibly can to jeopardize or to impede the forward movement of Donald Trump's agenda, and we the people, our agenda. We want to see things change. We voted for, the people listening, if you voted for Donald Trump, you voted for somebody who was going to drain the swamp. And however, there are people who are impeding that process, and those people who are impeding that process are a group of individuals who are lifers within the swamp, within the bureaucracy of the Department of, which in whatever departments. And by the way, Ed Klein, in his book All Out War, points out the FBI memo from the field offices, different than the DC hierarchy, of course, talking about the various offices who are investigating these individuals who are working within the federal government, who are trying to stop the forward progress of Donald Trump. If you have a chance, you can read, you pick up a copy, library perhaps, or whatever, All Out War by Ed Klein. And in the back, there's an appendix, and that appendix includes that FBI memo created by rank and file agents, stating that, look, there are people inside the federal government who are trying to torpedo, tank, and otherwise sabotage Donald Trump's agenda. So this is what we're seeing today. And that four-page summary memo, I do believe, will contain the names. It will not reveal sources and methods, but will contain the names of those individuals who, at the highest levels, and just this is just a very small portion, a very small number of names, kind of outlining what happened. And it will show that Donald Trump was absolutely 100% correct when he was saying that he was wiretapped. But it goes beyond that. It goes into journalists being wiretapped. In other words, people who have attempted to report on Benghazi, for example, There's just so much more to this. Understand this. The memo that will come out is just merely the start. It's just the tip of the iceberg. I hope that's clear, because we are to kind of also another word or kind of a picture, giving you a feel of where we're at. If you've ever, regardless of where you live, you know, it's a we'll say it's a hot summer day, and you go outside and you could feel the storm approaching. You know, the air changes, the sky changes, and you can see, you can smell, you can feel the change of this approaching storm. That's, well, we're beyond that. We're now getting the front edge of this storm, where the wind is starting to get really nasty, and the rain is kind of raining sideways now. It's starting in full force. The storm is here. And the air, you know, the electricity in the air from the lightning, the ozone smell from lightning strikes, maybe one or two initial strikes. Now, see, we are at that moment in time. But the storm is going to get much, much, much worse. And those people who are out there exposed better seek shelter. For those people who don't know what's going on, they didn't tune their radio to understand, hey, there's a tornado just touched down not too far from you. Yeah, you can kind of see this stuff going on, but you might misinterpret it. Understand this: the storm is starting. We are in the beginning stages of it, because this FISA memo, just the start, because the underlying documentation, I believe, that is referenced, will be referenced in this FISA memo, will eventually be released. When we spoke with Greg Hunter this week, USA Watchdog, he was talking about a number of things, including how the executive order, Donald Trump's executive order from December 21st, fits in the civil asset forfeiture. That changes a lot of things. This is all part of it as well. This, we must connect the dots. We must all of us now be participants in putting the puzzle pieces together. Multiple puzzles, as I mentioned yesterday, take a bunch of different boxes of puzzles, you know, say 1,000 pieces each. Rip off the picture off the front of the box of each puzzle, dump each puzzle, let's say 5 of them, throw them into the pieces into a grocery bag. Shake it all up, dump it on a table, and say, okay, go at it. Not knowing what the end picture is going to be, or what the end picture is, not knowing how many different puzzles, the pieces from the different puzzles are in that bag, all you see is just this big mess of pieces of puzzles. Different puzzles. But in the end, they will, once they are put together, they will form this panoramic vision, or this view, this panoramic. Remember those old cameras, by the way? I don't even know if they make them anymore. They took a special film, I think, that you could take a picture and it was like a panorama. Does anyone remember that? Okay, Tammy, you're shaking your head. Okay. Yeah, that's what we're looking at. I remember as an investigator, and again, getting personal here, I never did. I really never did domestic investigations. In other words, you know, as an investigator in the private sector, I always worked for corporations. I never took private cases where, hey, I think my wife is cheating or my husband is cheating. I would just say to the people that would approach me on that, if you think that's what's going on, you're probably right. Okay, and you don't need me. You know, you just don't need me. So you're probably correct if you think that's what's going on. And 9 times out of 10, that's true. And maybe once in a while, the person's just being hypersensitive. But generally speaking, if you think it's happening, it's happening. But getting personal again, you know, as an investigator, there have been days of taking shredded material that was shredded, and trying to put the pieces back together. especially in fraud investigations that involved corporations. Have you ever seen the bags that people have shredded? They're usually in clear white bags, and they're set out in a special place waiting for, if they're smart, they're handled by a company that specifically gets rid of shredded material. But if you have been an investigator, I know you've done this, or I suspect you've done this at least once in your life, which is just a maddening thing. You try to put the pieces, the shredded paper, back together again. You put it on a table and you start, hey, get the tape. And you might spend 12, 14, 18 hours just sitting there trying to reconstruct shredded documents. Oh, the cross-cut shredders, it was almost impossible. But in some cases, some of the recreation of those documents, in my case, were used as exhibits in court hearings. So this is kind of like that, in a sense. And again, I don't know if this makes sense to you. Again, I'm being very personal. This is how the real world works. At least in my case, it did. And I have sat next to police officers and investigators, and I've sat next to FBI agents who did the same thing. Work together. Let's put these documents back. Let's unshred these documents. Okay? No one was happy about it, by the way. Talk about a lot of coffee. Go through a lot of coffee trying to, get the pieces back together and the tape. But in the end, this is kind of what we're doing. Examples, I suppose, I've given you. You get it, right? I think everyone gets it. But this is where we're at. But the biggest story of our lifetime, the fact that this most scandal-free administration or regime, more appropriately, is responsible for some of the worst police state tactics ever in the history of this country, far surpassing anything Watergate. This surpasses everything. The go back to Lois Lerner, as I said, the IRS weaponized. Go back to the DOJ, the FBI weaponized. And if you think for a moment that Comey wasn't in on this from the beginning, that's no. Comey was, and I cannot believe his sanctimonious tweets out there. Oh, my goodness. Mueller, being the head of the FBI from the week before 9/11, September of 2001, right through, 2013, big part of covering up, for example, Uranium One. Uranium One, of course, was the selling off of our uranium assets to Russia. Ultimately, through Rosatom and through via Canada, Frank Giustra. The Clinton Foundation played an important role in this. Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton in his capacity with the Clinton Foundation, and Hillary Clinton, of course, using her powers of Secretary of State. And I've heard the excuse as well. Wait a minute, this had to pass a 9-member panel, the CFIUS panel, and nothing was ever, everything was fine. They approved it. Well, when you understand the depth and breadth and scope of the conspiracy, which is not a conspiracy theory, it's an actual criminal conspiracy, you'll understand how that happened. Uranium One, a big deal. On par, in my view, with selling secrets to the Soviets back in the post-World War II day. Remember Ethel Rosenberg and the Rosenbergs. At that level, this is what we're talking about. This is key. This is huge. This is, again, the adjectives just flow. But there you have it. So everything that we've seen over the last 10 years, including Benghazi, including Uranium One, including the emails, name whatever, and you had the weaponization of the Department of Justice and the FBI, you have the complicity of the media, and in some cases, the members of the media receiving money, being paid to peddle a specific story, this will come out. Remember the Fusion GPS bank records? They fought so hard not to have them released. Well, the deposit's okay, but the debits, oh, not so much. Not okay. Where was the money going? To who? Who was receiving the money? I think it's going to be an explosion when it's found out that, hey, you know, my favorite newscaster from MSNBC or CNBC or whatever, getting money, or from the even from the Wall Street Journal, they were being paid to run stories? This will come out.
Okay. The media is part of this. The underlying documents for this four-page FISA memo that will be released today, by all accounts, obviously, will indicate the complicity of the media in this. Now, again, I reference a piece in the Conservative Treehouse, again by Sundance, incredible researcher, writer. And I go back to my original statement today. This particular release of information today is merely the start, the tip of the iceberg. And I've said this before, and I will continue this right through and including subsequent to the release of the FISA executive summary memo today. As reported in the Conservative Treehouse, there continue to be questions about the substance behind this, what's in this release, the House Intelligence Committee memo. Now, with that release in mind, it's worthwhile remembering that, again, that this is the beginning of exposing the corruption within the Department of Justice, not the end. The exposing of the corruption within the FBI, not the end. The beginning of the explosion of the complicity with the media, not the end. And you got to remember that during the Obama regime, it was the U.S. Justice Department who maintained this attitude of non-accountability. The same with the FBI, the same with the IRS. Remember, going back to the IRS that I mentioned earlier, Lois Lerner unlawfully sent 21 CD, the disks containing Schedule B filings of over a million Americans to the Obama regime. The recipient, of course, was the Department of Justice. It was the Department of Justice who was chosen to utilize the political list in their secret research project. Have you heard about this? Of course you have, perhaps not in the terminology I'm using. And then when the U.S. District Judge Court Andrew Hannon demanded Department of Justice lawyers attend ethics classes due to their false representations to his court, he was using a big highlighter to highlight this corruption within the DOJ. And when the case, another case, the Bundy family, Kate Daly was on our flagship show talking about this. That whole case was recently thrown out of court. It was because why? Because of gross malicious conduct by the Department of Justice, again, highlighted by the judge. This is the very same Department of Justice who denied their own OIG, the Office of Inspector General Michael Horowitz, the right to conduct oversight on various aspects within the Department of Justice. We saw this in that 99-page document. So, look, we've been seeing this. The Department of Justice, the FBI, rogue agencies weaponized against its political opposition. This is the pervasive attitude, this era of ideological unaccountability. that is rampant within every corrupt system, and this was nurtured by Obama, and as well as Clinton. You got to go back to Clinton, as well as Hillary Clinton flaunting the her lawlessness with her own private server. To hell with the rules. The rules don't apply to me. This is what we're dealing with. By the way, and this is interesting. It should come as a surprise to no one that the epicenter of that attitude in Washington, D.C., they balk at the concept of having oversight. They give their middle finger at Congress by refusing to turn over, for example, underlying FISA application documents. Remember a December exchange between the current head of the FBI, Christopher Wray, and Jim Jordan. Very telling. The House Intelligence Committee, chaired by Devin Nunes, has oversight over the entire intelligence apparatus, including the Department of Justice, the FBI, counterintelligence, FISA courts, the whole shebang. The House Judiciary Committee, Chairman Bob Goodlatte, has statutory oversight over the entire Department of Justice. Now, the Senate Judiciary Committee, now, listen, there's a House and the Senate. The Senate Judiciary Committee, Chairman Chuck Grassley, has oversight over the federal court processes used by the U.S. Department of Justice. The Office of the Inspector General, just to be clear, Michael Horowitz, is the internal affairs of the Department of Justice. There are people who are attempting to expose this corruption. And, of course, this four-page summary memo that everyone is anticipating, of course, touches upon this, including but not limited to naming the names, including but not limited to Batman himself, Peter Strzok. But let's go back very briefly here because I don't want to run out of time. I want to play a 4 or 5 minute audio clip from a hearing in December that exemplifies what I'm talking about and puts the exclamation point on this whole thing. Mark Meadows, Representative Mark Meadows, had recently done a Twitter thread, if you will, whatever it's called, I don't know the name, writes Mark Meadows, because through all the memo news and headlines, it's critical to remember why this issue is important and why it should matter to everyday Americans. What this issue is all about, whether the DOJ, the Department of Justice, and the FBI under Obama abused their surveillance authority against American citizens and political opponents. Put another way, was the Obama Department of Justice weaponized to spy on the Trump campaign? Okay, take a step back. Let me repeat the former line. What is this issue all about? Whether the Department of Justice and the FBI under Obama, and you could also put in my view, the NSA, of course, the mechanism by which this was done, they abused their surveillance authority against American citizens. Okay, think about this. Now, go back to 2013. I cannot talk about this beyond referencing the fact that I experienced a really odd, I don't know what it was. It was a ringback, as I'd mentioned before, that referenced the NSA capturing data in a communication that I had done. And, of course, there are people right now that don't want me talking about this. I can't talk about it because it's in litigation. And when I say litigation, I am the defendant, a co-defendant in this. This is how twisted and convoluted this is. Me, by the way, that's already cost me out of my own pocket $40,000 to defend this frivolous, in my view, meritless piece of crap lawsuit that's been going on for 2 years that has really affected my family, my business, but this was what it was designed to do, in my view. And unfortunately, I can't talk about it, but when I can, let me tell you, you're going to want to tune into that because I've got a lot to say. It's not a threat. It's just a simple statement of fact. But continuing with Mark Meadows, remember, in general, the Department of Justice and the FBI spying on American citizens should automatically be met with major skepticism. That's what the Fourth Amendment is designed to protect against. When those American citizens and also political or the way this is written here, it's a little bit cumbersome. Were they also political opponents? If they were, it should raise even more red flags. So take that principle and look at what happened in this case. The DOJ spied on Carter Page, an American citizen. Red flag. Carter Page was also part of the Trump campaign. Double red flag. It should automatically raise questions. Now, pause. We know about the Peter Strzok, Lisa Page texts, the missing texts, in quotation marks, the McCabe concerns, and so on. But this is about more. Focus on the dossier here. The political opposition research project put together by Christopher Steele, Fusion GPS, and by extension, the DNC. Quite simply, this infamous Russian dossier, this is Meadows writing now, was unverified political opposition research paid for by the Hillary Clinton campaign and the DNC. If the Department of Justice used information like that as a key part of getting a surveillance warrant, it would be a huge problem. This is what it's all about. And to underline, to highlight the hubris of the intelligence apparatus, here's just a few-minute clip as we get close to the end of the program. Listen carefully to this. I throw a few comments in here and there, but listen carefully to this, because this is what this is a window into the yet unreleased FISA memo. Here, go ahead and play the only clip one. Go ahead.
Agent Peter Strzok, the former deputy head of counterintelligence at the FBI.
I don't remember his exact title, but I believe that's correct.
And he's the same Peter Strzok who was a key player in the Clinton investigation, the same Peter Strzok who interviewed Cheryl Mills, Huma Abedin, participated in the Clinton Secretary Clinton's interview. And he's also the same Peter Strzok who, now we know, changed Director Comey's exoneration letter, changed the term gross negligence, which is a crime, to extreme carelessness. Is that the same guy?
Well, Congressman, I don't know every step that the individual you mentioned was involved in, but certainly I know that he was heavily involved in the Clinton and email investigation.
Thank you. Is this the same Peter Strzok who helped, was a key player in the Russian investigation, and the same Peter Strzok who was put on Mueller's team, special counsel Bob Mueller's team?
I certainly know that he was working on special counsel's investigation. Whether or not he would be characterized as a key player on that investigation, that's really not for me to say.
And the same Peter Strzok that we learned this past weekend was removed from the special counsel team because he exchanged text messages with a colleague at the FBI that were displayed a pro-Clinton bias. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Talk about the same guy. Okay.
Yes.
Well, here's what I'm not getting. Peter Strzok is selected to be on Mueller's team. After all this history, put on Mueller's team, and then he's removed for some pro-Clinton text messages. I mean, there are all kinds of people on Mueller's team who are pro-Clinton. There's been all kinds of stories. PolitiFact reported 96% of the top lawyers' contributions went to Clinton or Obama. But Peter Strzok, the guy who ran the Clinton investigation, interviewed Mills, Abedin, interviewed Secretary Clinton, changed gross negligence, a crime, to the term extreme carelessness, who ran the Russian investigation, who interviewed Mike Flynn, gets put on Mueller's team, and then he gets kicked off for a text message that's anti-Trump. If he kicked everybody off Mueller's team who was anti-Trump, I don't think there'd be anybody left. So here, there's got to be something more here. It can't just be some text messages that show a pro-Clinton, anti-Trump bias. There's got to be something more. And I'm trying to figure out what it is. But my hunch is it has something to do with the dossier. Director, did Peter Strzok help produce and present the application to the FISA court to secure a warrant to spy on Americans associated with the Trump campaign?
Congressman, I'm not prepared to discuss anything about a FISA process in this setting.
We're not talking about what happened in the court. We're talking about what the FBI took to the court, the application. Did Peter Strzok, was he involved in taking that to the court?
I'm not going to discuss in this setting anything to do with the FISA court applications.
Well, let's remember a couple things, Director. And I know you know this. We've all been made aware of this in the last few weeks. Let's remember a couple things about the dossier. The Democrat National Committee and the Clinton campaign, which we now know were one and the same, paid the law firm who paid Fusion GPS, who paid Christopher Steele, who then paid Russians to put together a report that we call a dossier full of all kinds of fake news, National Enquirer garbage. And it's been reported that this dossier was all dressed up by the FBI, taken to the FISA court, and presented as a legitimate intelligence document, that it became the basis for granting a warrant to spy on Americans.
And there it is.
And I'm wondering if that actually took place. It sure looks like it did. And the easiest way to clear it up is for you guys to tell us what was in that application and who took it there.
Release the memo.
Congressman, our staffs have been having extensive interaction with both intelligence committees on our interaction with the FISA court, and I think that's the appropriate setting for those questions.
Here's what I think, Director Ray. I think Peter Strzok, head of counterintelligence at the FBI, Peter Strzok, the guy who ran the Clinton investigation, did all the interviews, Peter Strzok, the guy who was running the Russian investigation at the FBI, Peter Strzok, Mr. Super Agent at the FBI,
Batman.
I think he's
Batman.
The guy who took the application to the FISA court.
Absolutely.
And if that happened, I mean, think if this happened, if you had the FBI working with a campaign, the Democrats' campaign, taking opposition research, dressing it all up and turning it into an intelligence document and taking it to the FISA court so they could spy on the other campaign, if that happened, that is as wrong as it gets. And
that's,
you know,
a
what?
Coup.
Maybe I'm wrong. You can clear it all up. You can clear it all up for all of us here, all the Congress who wants to know, and frankly, all of America who wants to know. You can clear it all up by release. We sent you a letter 2 days ago. Just release the application. Tell us what was in it.
Release the memo.
But I don't think I am. I think that's exactly what happened. And if it did, it is as wrong as it can be. And people who did that need to be held accountable.
Okay. That was in 2017. So here's the bottom line. If in 2016, the Department of Justice, the FBI, used an unverified Clinton DNC paid-for dossier to spy on American citizens and political opponents in the Donald Trump campaign, this is as wrong as it gets. If that happens, Americans deserve, they need to know about it, period. And that's what we're waiting on right now. And I'll tell you something, this is what this points to. This is why you've got the hypersensitive reactions by the left, by the progressives, by the members of the deep state going absolutely crazy. You can't release this. This exposes the sources and methods. This is wrong. This is treasonous. No, the only thing treasonous that took place was the exact process by which the spying of Donald Trump was performed, the basis used for that spying. And that will jeopardize, by the way, that will jeopardize the four indictments by the special counsel. And I'll tell you right now, the special counsel, if after the release of this particular of this four-page memo and the underlying documents, if this doesn't put a stake through the heart of this Mueller investigation, which was predicated upon a scam on the American people, then we have lost more than the case. We've lost our country. You're right. As an American, to privacy from your government spying on you is absolutely essential. It's foundational to who we are as a nation. Never take that right for granted, no matter the political party or your ideological beliefs. Again, what we're about ready to see today is only the tip of the iceberg, just to see how corrupt the system has become and the methods used by Obama and in concert with Clinton against the political opposition. I will be back with more information later today. Catch me at 2 o'clock on InfoWars, tonight at 7 o'clock on the Hagmann Report. HagmannReport.com. Thanks for listening.
The Doug Hagmann Radio Show is brought to you by The Hagmann Report. Tune in to the Hagman Report weekdays, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information, go to HagmanReport.com. That's HagmanReport.com.